You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, my name's Tony East. I cover the team for Forbes and the Westside Community News, and today kicks off what I'm hoping to be a little bit longer of a series this offseason. Some player interviews with some ex-players, some current Pacers, some other maybe coaches. We'll see what ends up being in the mix here. But today is the first episode of that series as I am joined for a nice conversation with former Pacers center slash forward Shane Whittington. If you don't remember, or you weren't into the Pacers as much about a half decade ago, Shane Whittington played for the Pacers at a very interesting time. He started with the team in 2014 and went through 2016 with the team. So his rookie year was the year that Paul George was injured and missed almost the entire season. So the Pacers went from a back-to-back conference finalist team to rapidly changing expectations. Their youth, including guys like Whittington, were a little more important. They had to change their goals, change their structure, change how they played kind of on the fly for a year as they awaited the return of Paul George. And Shane and I talk about that season, what it was like, what kind of difficulties there was navigating through all that. And he was also on the team for the 2015-16 season. Paul George is back. Pacers are a little better. They reached the postseason again under Frank Vogel, and there were a little more expectations on that team after being that conference finalist squad, even though the team was much changed during that second season. We talked about that season, what it was like having Paul back, playing against the Raptors in that playoff series that went seven games, and we talk about some fans' least favorite shot. Some remember it very fondly. Solomon Hill's three-pointer in Toronto that ultimately did not count in that series that could have completely swung the tide and perhaps had the Pacers back in the second round in the first year of Paul George returning from the injury. So a really fun conversation about those two seasons. Whittington played at an interesting time and had a big fan of him in Larry Bird, not an active participant in the Pacers front office anymore. I talked about that on the podcast last Monday, but Larry Bird was someone who was a big fan of Whittington's skill set, signed him right out of college after he went undrafted in the 2014 draft out of Western Michigan and brought him in. And even still, after a rookie year where Whittington's traveling up to Fort Wayne very often and playing with the Pacers sparingly, doing all that traveling, Larry Bird still said, "I believe in you. I would like you on this team. I want you to come back." And they brought him back for a second season because of that. He had some nice, solid G League performances. Him and Rakeem Christmas became very close. We talk about their relationship a little bit as well as they made that frequent drive up I-69 from Indianapolis to Fort Wayne to play in both cities often. So Shane Whittington, two-year Pacer, averaged 2.5 points and 1.5 rebounds per game in his 27 appearances, joins us on Locked On Pacers today. Before he joins, really quickly though, let me tell you guys about Built Bar, who are making the best tasting protein bars ever. They're 100% covered in chocolate, soft, easy to chew, and delicious protein bars. And what makes them awesome, beyond that they're really delicious and basically a candy bar, is that they're healthy. They have a new flavor that's super popular. It's my second favorite now, the cookie dough chunk puff. So it's got chunks of cookie dough in there, marshmallow infused flavor, and of course 100% covered in that chocolate. So it's chewy texture, but still that cookie dough flavoring and covered in that real chocolate. But it's healthy too. Only 160 calories, but it has 15 grams of protein, and all Built Bars are like that regardless of flavor. I love the peanut butter brownie. A lot of people love the fruit variety ones. The coconut ones are really popular. You can get a mixed box with a bunch of their most popular flavors over at Built.com for your family or a treat to have. I use it as a meal substitute sometimes at work. You've got to try them yourself. They're the best protein bars out there. You can get them at Built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15 when you check out. You'll get 15% off your order. That promo code again is LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. And now let's bring in former Pacers forward slash center Shane Whittington. We're now joined by former Pacers forward Shane Whittington. Shane, my first question has little to do with your time with the team and more about the NBA offseason. As a former player, do you like seeing all the player movement and watching all these guys switch teams and move around?
Man, it was kind of tough. It was kind of tough because, you know, you build friendships with these guys. And I'm just speaking strictly on the time I was with the Pacers. It's difficult. You know what I mean? My vet was Roy Hibbert. And my second year there, obviously, he took off. So it was kind of tough. It was kind of difficult. It's good to see them go off and obviously make some decent money elsewhere. But it was kind of crappy as friendship wise goes, you know, seeing guys every day to not seeing them at all.
Yeah, that's always the hardest part that Kevin Pritchard always talks about, is that human element. And you know, you don't think as a fan or whatever role you're in about players and their kids. I have to switch schools right before school starts or something like that happening in this time. Going back to 2014, that draft goes through. You don't get picked, but you get snapped up by the Pacers pretty quickly. What do you remember about Larry Bird and the Pacers calling and wanting to bring you in after that draft cycle?
I mean, honestly, it was just a blur, to be completely honest. I was just super happy that someone called, because we had the same offer from San Antonio. And I do remember talking with my girlfriend at the time, my wife now. San Antonio would be way too far away for her to be able to visit. So, you know, it was a no-brainer for me. Especially with the broken leg, you know, we didn't really know how everything was going to happen. It was an unguaranteed contract or non-guaranteed contract. So we're like, oh, yeah, Indy seems like the best option at this moment. So we were super excited that they called, super stoked to get down there.
Did it mean a lot coming from a guy like Larry Bird, and really knowing your other option was San Antonio, where Greg Popovich is descending upon your phone as well?
Yeah, no, I mean, It's always difficult to look back on, just because, Popovich is one of the best coaches that has ever, you know, existed in NBA. But you also have Larry Bird, who is also one of the greatest players to ever play. And he was one of my biggest advocates while I was at Indy. It's always great to understand or to know that those two had some sort of interest in me while I was young anyway.
So before we talk about your plan days a little bit, I want to ask about a memory that you might have buried. If I recall correctly, your first nickname in Indy was Justin Timberlake after your wonderful singing of Latch by at Fan Jam. What do you remember about that? Were you nervous at all? And has anyone asked you about being called Justin Timberlake in 8 years since that happened?
No, my wife always makes jokes here and there, just because it was one of her favorite little, jabs at me. But no, the one thing that I do remember from Fan Jam is driving down from Kalamazoo, my parents' place, basically, and driving down and literally just belting out Latch the entire 3.5 hour drive from Michigan to Indianapolis. So yeah, no, I was super nervous. I don't like doing things like that in front of a lot of people, but I just kind of went with it, obviously. So
it's always funny that to me that, athletes who perform in front of fans all the time, it's totally different when you have to sing and it's all eyes on you. Every rookie every year totally hits big crack.
Man, it's always tough. It's tough. Yeah, I talk about this all the time now. We've kind of transitioned into private equity and talking to, maybe one person online or anything like that. It's so much more difficult to do that than it is to, let's say play overseas in front of, 2,000, 5,000, 10,000 people overseas and, in these arenas. And I feel more comfortable doing that than actually sitting down and talking in front of people, whether it's 10 to, either one or 10 to people,
Well, none of them know that your nickname was Justin Timberlake, which I'm sure.
No shit. Excuse my language. Sorry, man.
So your rookie season was a strange year between the PG injury and everything going on with the team at the time. For you specifically as a player, like you said, on an unguaranteed contract, didn't know what your future would be after the draft. What was it like having to prove yourself to Vogel, to the team, and to Larry Bird every single day that you were with that franchise?
Well, it was tough, honestly. It was tough on my mind and my mental. I've talked to Yamahimi in the past few years, and he had an interview one time on a podcast saying how Indy was the best thing for him. And that it's a true statement when you talk about how every system is specific to the player, and you can thrive or really kind of fail based on the system. And I don't want to throw anything anybody under the bus, but I just feel like I was not meant for that system. I was not meant for Vogel's system. So it was very difficult to prove to him that I was a good basketball player. I wasn't able to do the things that I felt like I was good at. And I had to just be a yes man for the longest time. And that's one of my biggest regrets as a player, not being able to or not choosing to prove in a specific way that I feel like I was good at on the court to these guys. So definitely something I've always regretted as a player, but you know, it is what it is. And I've had a great career overall. So, I mean, I can't complain.
And you were more stretched out a little in Indy, right? Where you played the five more overseas and in college. Is that more what you're referring to kind of?
No, I was more referring to the, you know, Vogel, like the two bigs, you know, one that being such a stretch player, in my opinion. When I went overseas, I was able to do what I like to do, is stretch floor. You know, if I play the four, then, you know, I'm in the post a lot. If I play the five, I'm, you know, out in the perimeter a lot, going around guys. So, and that's just kind of basically what I'm referring to. And obviously the NBA is completely different than overseas. So, you know, it's easier to say that now, but, you know, it was a difficult situation to be in and not do what I'd like to do, you know, on the court anyway.
There are a lot of those four or five tweeners on your roster those 2 years there. What was kind of a wake up moment for the NBA for you? I know that I think I read an interview where Nene, the mammoth, that was the first guy that was like, oh man, this guy's huge. Was there any other stuff like that, including that story, that you were just like, oh man, this stuff's tough?
Yeah, there's actually a practice situation, you know, that I don't think I've ever really talked about. And it was just a small situation, but I distinctly remember, like, oh shit, this isn't like college. It was one of the early, it might've been training camp, and Chris Copeland was coming off screens. We were doing some sort of, floppy series, picking off of pin downs and stuff like that. And Chris Copeland was on defense. I was on offense, and I was setting screens on him. I think CJ Miles was coming off of him, and I hit Cope a few times on these screens. And like the third time around, Cope just literally threw his shoulder into me and floored me real quick. And it was, at that time I was like, excuse my language. Oh shit. Like this is definitely not college. So, you know, he kind of gave me a little, hey, do it again. And I'm probably going to swing on you real quick. So, and obviously Cope is one of the greatest dudes I've ever met. You know, him and I are still very, you know, relatively close when it comes to, hanging out here in Indy and all that stuff. So he's a really good dude. But, you know, there was one situation where I pissed him off a little bit, and he let me know.
I'm sure for him, you know, the rookie in preseason setting the hard screens, he'd be like, come on, man.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I didn't know. I'm just trying to do my job. You know what I mean? So, and he's like, hey, man, chill the fuck out. Excuse my language. Yeah.
What was it like having David West on your team as a rookie? You know, he's one of the best, if not the best, still to this day, free agency signings that the Pacers franchise has ever been able to have. What was it like to be able to kind of learn from him and be around what he does during your first year?
Yeah, no, I really wish that I had more of a learning mindset when it came to him and asking him questions and really trying to soak up the knowledge that I had, that he had, him and Luis Scola, you know what I mean? Both of them are two people that I've seen be the hardest working people that I've ever seen on a team. You know, and going back overseas, Luis Scola is kind of a legend over there in the ACB and Argentinian League and all that stuff. So, you know, I really didn't understand who those guys were until I left the Pacers. And I really wish that I had the time with them again to be able to really kind of get into their minds and really kind of ask more questions about basketball and life in general, because David West was one of the smartest guys I've ever like had the privilege to be around. You know, every road trip he had his notebook and he was working on something that would either put his family ahead or put himself ahead, you know. So he was always really trying to expand his mind and his game the entire time that I knew him.
Was that season, you know, the team, I don't like this word, but for lack of a better one, the team vibe, you know, knowing that PG was out until the last six or so games, you know, the usual goals for that team coming off of conference finals appearances had totally changed without him. What was that kind of like for the team mentally as they had to go through that and figure out how to navigate? Okay, here's what we were before. Now we're going through totally different goals this year.
Yeah, no, it seemed frustrating. You know what I mean? Like, it seemed like everyone was thrown into a position that they weren't ready for. And, you know, I'm maybe overstepping, but I feel like, you know, obviously Cope was thrown into a position. Roy Hibbert was thrown into a position who had, he had a lot of pressure on his shoulders that season to perform, especially without PG. It was very difficult, in my opinion, for that, for his situation. You know, it was, I feel like it was just tough all around. It was tough on Vogel. You know, he had to take a team, basically the same team from Eastern Conference Finals to not even making the playoffs the next year, you know? So I think it was just a very difficult mindset transition for everyone. So yeah, you know, PG's obviously one of the best players in the NBA. He's an absolute, you know, specimen when it comes to that kind of stuff. Like, he, after his injury, I mean, we did a lot of working out together, you know, and the first game back, I remember him having, you know, just three crazy steals. And I'm like, how in the hell did this guy do this type of stuff off of an injury that, you know, happened less than, you know, 6 months ago, 9 months ago, whatever it was, when he did get injured and he came back. It's difficult to go through a season without a guy like PG, for sure. You know, and you could tell that everyone was kind of missing him that season, at least.
How quickly did you realize he was good? Like, when he, I mean, you knew obviously, but when he came back from the injury and you can see him firsthand at practice, was it like one-on-one drills, things like that? How obvious?
Yeah. Oh my God, man. Hey, he's just, his hands are so good. His handles are so good for being 6'9". And being that long, the way that he handles the ball, the way that he moves on defense, you could see glimpses of it when he was doing his recovery situations and stuff like that. And once we started playing one-on-one, I was like, oh wow, this guy's just different. So yeah, no, you could definitely tell. It was easy to see.
How rewarding was it going through the non-guaranteed contract dance to come back that second year to have the Pacers have that faith in you and bring you back?
No, it was like you said, you know, it was more Larry. Larry was my biggest advocate in, you know, our exit interview my rookie year. He's like, hey man, I really wish you would have played, you know, like 15 minutes to kind of develop you a little bit, you know, while you're here. You know, we didn't really have a lot of, you know, it was a down year, like you were talking about without PG. So Larry wanted me to play 10 to 15 minutes a game just to kind of develop a little bit. But obviously that never was able to come to fruition. But, you know, it was still great. You know, we had a good summer. I didn't go anywhere. I stayed in Indy and worked out with the guys here during the summer. So it really kind of made me feel wanted, I guess, that they were like, all right, yeah, that's guaranteed a contract. Because I believe, God, who was Tony? There was a guy in preseason that came in that everyone, all the fans wanted to sign him and not me. So I was signed over him. And
I'm sure that was fun.
Yeah, no, it was great. But no, it gave me a little bit of faith. But obviously they bought the four-way Mad Ants, and we went out, transitioned through there quite a few times back and forth. So it was a good development season for me, for sure. And I think that was their plan. But I think they planned on me developing a little differently than I did. So
that was Tony Douglas. Is that correct?
Tony Douglas. Yep. Yes. There you go. Yep.
Did you love the I-69 drive up to Fort Wayne? I think you traveled up there quite a bit, didn't you, John?
Oh my God. It was at least 12 times. Yeah. My wife was pregnant at the time too. So like, it was so, she was working down in Indianapolis. I was, you know, so like, she'd stay down in Indianapolis when she had to work, and she'd drive basically back and forth just as much as I did. So it was great. It was a good time.
So that 2015-16 season, obviously Paul's plan, you guys are a little bit better. I remember talking to Alex Poitras about this a few years ago when the Pacers played the Cavs in the first round in 2018. Poitras was LeBron on the scout team for that team when they were prepping for that series. Did you have a special role or anything for that Raptors series that went seven games?
No, I mean, it wasn't anything special. Obviously, you know, you're on the scout team, you do as much as you can. You know, guys on the scout team, you can kind of be yourself. You can do things, you know, especially, let's say, you know, you're LeBron, you act like LeBron. You know what I mean? You have the confidence to act like LeBron in those situations. So But, you know, there wasn't anything specific that I was doing. It was just more of, you know, all right, hey, you know, you're this guy, act like him kind of situation. So it wasn't anything crazy. It wasn't anything standout-ish. So
you didn't get to do any DeRozan fadeaway mid-range shots in practice?
No, there is a situation where I got yelled at for doing a step back, you know, shot as well. But I made the shot and I still got yelled at. So, you know, that goes to show a lot of like system wise, like some players are good in some systems, some players thrive and some players don't thrive. So
what do you remember about the Solomon Hill three that was waved off in Toronto? What were your emotions like going through that sequence?
Oh my goodness, man. Do you remember the telephone like booth like scene in Anchorman? You're stuck in a glass case of emotion. Yeah, that's how I felt, man. It was crazy. It felt like it took so long for Solo to get that shot off, but like the anticipation, the anxiety, and then the feeling of, oh my God, he made it, but time expired kind of situation. Oh my goodness, man. It was just a very mixed emotion, sad. Like it was a great series. It went down seven games. It ended on that situation, man. That's playoff basketball though. You know what I mean? Like it was a great situation, but it was also terrible.
Did you enjoy the being a part of a series, at least like that, going through the game seven, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah, no, it was definitely a very big difference from the first year to the second year. And there's a lot of difference when it comes to prepping and the amount of prep that does go into a playoff series in comparison to just a normal everyday series. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it was cool to see. It was cool to witness. Obviously, Rakeem Christmas and I were just kind of in suits on the end of the bench, so we didn't have a lot of pressure. So we got to see it in a very cool aspect where we had the best seats in the house. You know,
were you and him close traveling to Fort Wayne all the time?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we're still close to this day. You know what I mean? He's married, has a kid. You know what I mean? Playing in the Virgin Islands. You know, he's doing his thing.
Well, Shane, thank you very much for your time talking about the Pacers and your 2 years with the team. If anything else you want to share about those couple of your seasons?
Nah, well, I mean, you know, it was good enough for me to be here permanently. You know, I'm an Indy resident now. I love it. You know, I love Indy. I love the guys that are here that I work out with. You know, my wife really enjoys it. Our kids are starting school in Fishers. So, you know, it's Indianapolis is a gem that I never knew existed until I got down here. So
hear that story a lot from players. If only that recruiting pitch worked in the free
right. No,
Herb Simon would love if that was possible. You're gonna put that quote up on the wall somewhere in the facility.
Definitely.
Shane, thank you for the time. Everybody, thank you for listening, and take care.